This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Humans are putting an enormous amount of pressure on coral reef environments. From rising global temperatures and increasing oceanic CO2 to dynamite fishing, we are rapidly sending the world's reefs into oblivion. Here to give us an update on the condition of coral reefs, focusing on Malaysia in particular, is Julian Hyde, the General Manager of Reef Check Malaysia. And incidentally, Reef Check is celebrating its 10th anniversary this week. Hi, Julian, how are you?
Good afternoon. I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Always good to have you on the show.
It's always nice to be here.
So, I mean, yes, you're celebrating your 10th anniversary, 10 long years.
10 years, it's amazing, yeah. It's gone very fast. It's exciting all the time. I'm learning new stuff all the time. The team's growing and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
And if you could just remind everybody what the work that Reef Check actually does.
Well, if you go back to the fact that coral reefs are an important ecosystem, biologically and economically. So they're a source, they're a habitat for a third of marine life. In other words, if the coral reefs go, the fish populations go. So we have no more fish. That's how important it is. But they also provide jobs in fisheries. They provide a lot of jobs in tourism. Think about islands like Pulau Tiaman, where we have a team working. Most of the tourists that go there are looking to either dive or snorkel. Mm-hmm. And if the reefs are not there anymore, then those tourists will stop going.
And you've actually argued before that the decline of our coral reefs has ecological and economic consequences. You know, how does one even put a value on coral reefs to begin with?
People have tried, but I don't think anybody has succeeded in getting a realistic value yet. But we made a stab at this a while ago, again, referring to Pulau Tiaman or any of the islands off the East Coast. So we know how many visitors there are to Tiaman in a year, roughly. It's about 200,000. Mm-hmm. So if you make some assumptions about what they do and how long they stay for and how much they spend, then we calculated that tourism to Tiaman alone is worth about 150 million ringgit a year. Right. Mm-hmm. That's in accommodation services, diving services, snorkeling services, boat services, restaurants, transportation and so on. But that's only once they arrive on Tiaman. You know, they've got to get to Tiaman. They've got to stay somewhere else on their way. So if you think of somebody coming from Europe, for example, they fly into KL. They'll stay a day or two in KL. Then they'll go across the peninsula onto the island and then they'll go back to KL. So if you round all of that up, you know, the total value of that tourism is worth a lot more than just what people spend on the island. Mm-hmm. But if we just focus on the islands, we reckon that if you look at the three big islands on the East Coast, so Perhentian, Redang and Tiaman, about 500 million ringgit per year in tourism spent on those islands. And most of it, like I said, is marine tourism. So lose the reefs, lose the economic value.
And that's just peninsula. We're not even talking about East Malaysia yet.
Right, where 75% of our reefs are.
Yeah.
Where there are also many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people going to the islands. Everybody's heard of Sipadan, you know, one of the best dive sites in the world. But there's plenty more coastal tourism going on in Sabah as well. So I'm not going to try and make a stab and say what the value of the whole thing is in Malaysia, but it's a lot. And it employs a lot of people as well, thousands of people on the islands and on the mainland nearby providing services rely on this for their livelihoods.
And just going back to Reef Check, I mean, for the last 10 years, what has, I guess, your core sort of mission been?
Well, the core mission remains to ensure that Malaysia's reefs are sustainably managed. Okay, now, one problem that we encounter is that it's an invisible ecosystem, right? Nobody ever sees it. And you talk about managing coral reefs, they're like, heads get scratched and nobody really knows what you're talking about. So put it into a terrestrial context. If you're a gardener, okay, you have a garden. I've just planted a load of herbs on my balcony at home, for example. So I've got to feed them, I've got to weed them, I've got to water them, I've got to look after them, nurture them so that they grow and I get lots of herbs for my cooking. Mm-hmm. So I'm managing that little ecosystem on my balcony, right? It's called gardening. So we can do the same with coral reefs, right? People are diving on them and kicking them a little bit. People are throwing anchors on the reefs. That breaks it. There's pollution and trash coming from tourism, from the mainland, whatever. All of these impacts need to be managed. So that's our core mission, is to make sure that reefs are sustainably managed. But what's interesting now, looking back over 10 years, is the way that the organization has evolved. So we started off doing surveys, and we were all about need data, got to have better idea of what's going on. So we'll do surveys. And then we're like, okay, that's not enough. We need to do more. So we said, well, we'll do some education work. And we worked with Department of Marine Parks Malaysia. Even in those early days, we were collaborating with them. So we started doing some education work. That worked for a few years. And we just heard as an aside, a few months ago, one of my colleagues on the island said that somebody who took part in our education program 6 or 7 years ago quoted back to them, "We don't eat turtle eggs. And we don't eat turtle eggs because you told us in our education program all those years ago why we shouldn't eat them." And they're still practicing that.
Amazing.
So education works, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the story. So we did education, and then we started getting involved a bit more in advocacy. And this is four or five years ago, I was struggling to see how we can participate more in management, that whole vision thing. How can we do that? Because the Department of Marine Parks manages reefs in Peninsular Malaysia. Sabah Parks manages reefs in Sabah, right? So what's our role? And we came to the conclusion that our role is actually working with the community to get them to participate in that management. So we've now evolved into this organization which works with communities on the ground, helps them to understand reef issues, because a lot of people don't locally, helps them to find ways to get involved and to participate. And we've now got people on three islands, full-time teams on three islands, who are working with the local communities there to explain all of these issues and to help them get involved. So that's where we're up to today. And that's what's really exciting, because that's when you can make a real difference, working with the local communities to say, these are your reefs and this is what's happening to them, because we've got lots of data to explain that now. And this is what we need to do to make them sustainable and to keep your livelihoods, your economy sustainable for the next generation or three generations. So that's where we're up to.
And people have been very, I suppose, welcoming of you guys. It's hard to say, right? I mean, they see this, foreigner, forgive me for saying it, but a non-Malaysian coming and telling them what to do, for example. You know, have they been quite, you know, open to your suggestions?
Well, I don't go.
Okay.
So I have a team of Malaysians working for all of Reef Check's employees apart from me are locals. So we've got Sabahans working in Sabah. We've got Peninsular people working in Peninsular. So I'm just the guy that does the admin, really, these days. but it's an interesting question, because a lot of the time, the answer is no. People don't like us coming and telling them what to do, because some members of the community will perceive that we're trying to interfere with their lives.
Exactly.
Which is true, we are. But we're doing it for good reasons,
for sure.
What I like to think are good reasons. If we look at somewhere like Mantanani that we're working at the moment, it's an area that's seen a lot of fish bombing. Okay, destroys the reef. Mm-hmm. The local community doesn't necessarily understand a lot of these issues. So our goal is to say, well, you know, you realize that you're killing the habitat for the future fish populations. Mm-hmm. And if we can get them to understand that, if we can start that dialogue, then they start to say to us, well, what do we do? And this is what's happened in Mantanani. So we started off with our first workshop in September last year, and we did a whole exercise with them about the timeline and the changes, and they came to the conclusions themselves that, yeah, something's wrong. So a few months later, they made the decision to write their own management plan. Now, this is a community in Malaysia, I think, for the first time, sitting down and saying, we want to write a management plan.
Amazing.
So we helped them through that process, and we're now trying to find ways to implement that. But yeah, the initial response is often, go away, we don't want you interfering with our lives. But
yeah,
once you get to talk to them and get them to understand what it is you're doing, you get much more cooperation.
And it's not an easy process, I suppose. What I was trying to get at is the kind of effort that goes into doing these things. That's not that I was trying to out you as a foreigner.
Yeah.
Just trying to say that it takes a lot of groundwork to get people on board to these programs.
5 years we've been working in Tiaman and Mantanani,
mm-hmm.
and we are now, you know, the dialogue is starting. So that's 5 years. Yeah, it takes a long time.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've been reading a lot, I think, about the problem of coral bleaching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I read The Guardian a lot, for example, and they're always talking about what's happening at the Great Barrier Reef. But, okay, let's just get some basics out of the way. What is coral bleaching and what causes it?
Okay, so coral bleaching is a stress response on the part of coral. Coral is a little animal, lives in a hard shell in the reef. And when it gets stressed, it releases algae from inside its tissues, which are colorful, so it loses its color, and that's why it looks bleached.
Mm-hmm.
But the algae also provide most of the food to the coral. So it means that the corals are basically on a starvation diet. Imagine somebody gives you a real fright and you go white in the face.
Mm.
You're like, that's like what the coral's doing. It's being stressed, it's being frightened, and it's thrown all of the algae out through its source of food. And it's now, like I said, on a starvation diet. So that's what bleaching is.
Okay. And is it a direct consequence of climate change?
That's part of it. So
is it a trigger?
It's a trigger, yeah. So there's some things which cause local bleaching, like a chemical pollution spill that will bleach corals in a small area. But bleaching at the coral Great Barrier Reef level is a response to warm waters. Coral lives in a very narrow temperature range, 2, maybe 3 degrees. Mm-hmm. If the temperature goes outside of that, that's the stressor that causes it to release the algae and causes it to bleach. And corals can live in that condition for a few weeks. But if the stressor remains for too long, then the corals will die.
Okay. So can this be reversed? Is coral bleaching reversible?
Bleaching is reversible, yeah. Coral that is bleached is not dead. And this is a big misconception. Everybody sees white coral and assumes it's dead.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. It will be if the stressor doesn't go away quite soon. But mm-hmm. if the stressor does go away, then the corals will reattract the algae back into their tissues and they'll regain their color and they'll regain their food source.
Okay.
So like I said, 6 to 8 weeks is about the sort of time scale we're talking about. If the stressor lasts longer than that, then we're in trouble.
So a paper published in Nature by some of the world's top scientists actually said that climate change is making irreversible changes to the world's coral reefs. What's happening?
Why irreversible? Yeah. Because once the coral has been stressed, and then the stress all goes away, mm-hmm. and the algae come back, so it's retained its food source, it's got its food source back again. Nonetheless, the coral is still stressed, it's still weakened, so it's not reproducing as fast as it normally would, it's not growing as fast as it normally would. It's like a human being after an illness, right? You're still flat on your back, you're recuperating. Well, that's what happens to the corals after the bleaching event, for example, after the stressor is there. So it takes a while for them to recover. What we're seeing now is increasingly frequent bleaching events. So the corals barely had time to recover from the last one, and then bang, another shock hits it. And it's like, oh, not again. So we're weakening the corals each time. And I guess there's going to become a tipping point where the bleaching happens so frequently that the corals don't really recover from one to the next. And so we slowly, slowly, slowly degrade the reefs and their ability to recover. And that's when it's irreversible, basically.
And then they die.
And then they die.
And then all the consequences that you spoke of.
And then all the consequences. The habitat goes, the fish populations go, there's no tourism, there's no food, and we have real problems.
I'm speaking today to Julian Hyde. He's the General Manager of Reef Check Malaysia. And we're actually discussing coral reefs around the world, but specifically in Malaysia. And coming out after the break, we'll find out more about the results of the 10-year survey that Reef Check actually conducted.
Yes.
You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Julian Hyde. He's the General Manager of Reef Check Malaysia, and we're discussing the status of coral reefs in Malaysia, and we're looking at the results from the survey conducted last year. So just getting into that, 10 years, and you did the National Reef Check Survey Program again. 10 years has gone on. So the snapshot of the reef health provided by the survey data suggests reefs in Malaysia are relatively healthy. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's good stuff. There's a loose measure of reef health. Marine scientists will get into the details and disagree with me, but roughly, we look at something called live coral cover. So it's live hard coral and live soft coral. And when we add together the percentage of the substrate that is occupied by those two species indicators, if it's around about 50%, we consider that to be quite healthy.
Okay.
So there are bands of unhealthy, moderately healthy, healthy, and so on. So in Malaysia, it's hovering at around 50%. So
okay.
If you look at a reef, an area of reef, 50% of it is live coral, and that's quite good. Of course, the average masks the good and the bad, but we say, in Malaysia, on the whole, things are in reasonably good condition. So we're quite happy with that. And more than that, over the 10 years we've been doing surveys, it has maintained at that level as well. So it doesn't seem to be declining horribly at the moment.
And, there were some global coral bleachings that happened, and Malaysia was also affected by it, right? So, I mean, can you see an improvement, from what has happened before?
The big bleaching that hit us was in 2010,
right? Yeah.
And our data is clearly showing a big drop in live coral cover in 2010. So we've got 2009, we're at about 50%. And then 2010, there's a big dip down to maybe 35, 40%. But it's then recovered. So we're back up to the usual level. So that we have some very clear indications then of what was happening around that time. Last year, the year that damaged the Great Barrier Reef that you were mentioning just now, we really dodged a bullet because there was not that much bleaching around Malaysia. It was further south and further east of us, so other parts of the Coral Triangle. And Malaysia got off quite lightly, so a few percentage points of coral mortality, but not that much that really shows up in the data a lot. From that specific event. There's other things happening, mm-hmm. but from that specific event, we weren't too badly hit. So, yeah, we have increasing number of sites. We did over 200 sites last year, all around Peninsular Malaysia and Sabah and Sarawak. And on average, we've got pretty healthy reefs. So, yeah, it's good.
And how do you actually conduct these surveys? I mean, what sort of goes into, you know, gathering all of this data? I imagine it must be a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it's huge. I have to say it's huge because it makes us sound better. So a reef survey is actually relatively straightforward to do. If you are a reasonably experienced diver, then we can train you to do that. We have a training course for that, which is a 3-day course. But basically, we lay a long tape measure along the bottom, 100 meters long, and we swim along it and we count indicator species. So certain types of fish, like groupers, mm-hmm. Certain types of invertebrates like lobsters, and then the substrate itself, so hard coral, soft coral, algae, and so on. And all of these indicators were chosen because they're telling us something about the health of the reef. All right. So, for example, if there's lots of adult-sized groupers, that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. It shows that there's not too much fishing pressure. If there's a lot of live coral cover, again, that's a good sign. There's not too much recent damage going on. The problem with the surveys is so we have teams of people that go out and do those surveys. It takes about 5 or 6 people to do a survey. And like I said, we do 200 plus around the country every year. So we rely on volunteers. Shout out to our volunteers. Thank you all very much for the work that you do. And they come along and they help us to do the surveys. So we'll go to Tiernan for 3-4 days and we'll do 8 or 10 surveys. And then we do work with Marine Parks Department as well to do some of the surveys. So we kind of split between the two, which is a great way to get them collaborating as well. So it is a big effort. And, you know, I've got somebody dedicated to that now every year because it's growing and growing and growing. We have a 10-year data set. You know, that's a really good set of information about what's happening with the reefs, and we need to be looking at that more carefully now and analyzing it more carefully, which we're doing at the moment, to see deeper into what the trends are.
And one of the areas of the report focuses on status of coral reefs in key ecoregions in Malaysia. What are these key ecoregions exactly?
They are areas that have been defined scientifically as being similar.
Uh-huh. Right?
So we've got the areas around Sabah, particularly the east coast of Sabah, that's all part of the Coral Triangle. And that has been identified by marine scientists as having the greatest biodiversity. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's one ecoregion. And then you can imagine the east coast of Peninsular Malaysia is the South China Sea, and it's a little bit shallower and there's not so much circulation. So that has a different kind of makeup as an ecosystem, as an ecoregion. And on the east, the west coast of Peninsular Malaysia, Straits of Malacca, you can imagine that's a different ecosystem again.
Completely.
We have the coastal mangrove and mud areas, so that affects the water quality. There's lots of
shipping,
and so on.
Yeah.
So that's a very different ecoregion as well. And we find different populations of the various indicator species and species in general. So there's a very high level of fish and coral species in the east of Sabah, the Coral Triangle area, less so off the east coast of Peninsular Malaysia and less so off the west coast. So it helps us to define what to expect, actually. You shouldn't expect to find off the Straits of Malacca reefs that are as diverse as they are in East Malaysia.
Right.
So it helps to set expectations for different areas as well.
Okay. And I was just reading one article and a scientist was saying that while it's true that many reefs are being monitored and are deteriorating rapidly, many of the world's reefs are not monitored at all. So I think he was trying to say, in essence, that the problem is not as catastrophic as it's being painted out. Do you agree with that?
Well, you can look at that two ways. You can say that because we don't have any data on those other reefs, perhaps they're okay.
Yeah.
You could look at those and say, well, we have no data. They could be in terrible condition.
Yeah.
So let's look at the glass half full analogy and say, yeah, there are lots of areas of reef in Malaysia that we don't look at.
Mm-hmm.
There are islands, small islands off the east coast that we've never done surveys. There's plenty of coastal reef in Sabah and Sarawak that we haven't done surveys. We just don't have the resources. So we don't know what the condition of these reefs is. So our data has limitations. Right?
Yeah.
It's not a 100% comprehensive survey of the reefs in Malaysia. It's the best we can do so far. But it does have limitations. But what we can say is in those areas that we are doing surveys, we can be confident about what's happening and we can make management decisions to say there's either sewage pollution or there's too many divers or there's an overfishing problem. And those issues are probably reflected in the areas we haven't been to.
Mm-hmm.
There are some exceptions. Places like Liang Liang, that's so far out there, is not affected by issues of coastal pollution, for example, I would imagine, because it's out in the middle of the South China Sea.
Yeah.
But it will have other issues. You know, there's a lot of fishing going on in those areas. There are problems with bleaching in those areas, crown of thorns and other predators. So, yeah, we don't know everything about everywhere. But what we do know about, we have some good data that we can make some decisions on.
And I guess, like you said, you know, you have identified key areas that, you know, would probably show you some of the best data that would be representative of what's happening around.
We hope so. In each of the locations where we do surveys, we pick sites according to a protocol. So if you go to a new area, you say, okay, what's the best reef first, and then what's the worst reef second, and then you find an intermediate reef. So you then have a sample of the different things. And that requires some local knowledge. So if we go to a new island, like Mantanani, for example, we would need to talk to the locals, mm-hmm. the fishermen, the diving industry, the snorkeling industry, whatever it's called. Take us to your best bit of reef. All right, good. That's nice. That's a baseline. And now take us to the worst bit. Oh, that's not in very good condition. So, and then you patch together, hopefully, and you get a representative sample.
Okay, so let's go through the comparative study that you did, 10 years of reef check data. You compared Peninsula Malaysia to East Malaysia. What's the report card, I suppose?
The report card. Reefs in Peninsula Malaysia are less impacted by things like destructive fishing.
Okay.
All right, so the live coral cover on reefs in Peninsula Malaysia is higher. All right, so you think, therefore, reefs in Peninsula Malaysia are healthier. Possibly, but then again, remember the average, right? That hides the good and the bad.
Yeah.
The average is, the range is less in Peninsula Malaysia. So the bad reef is less bad than the bad reef in Sabah, if I can put it like that. And the good reef is less good than the good reef in Sabah. Right?
Okay.
So it appears that reefs in Malaysia, in Peninsula Malaysia, are a little bit healthier than in Sabah, but on the other hand, reefs in Sabah are much more diverse than reefs in Peninsula Malaysia. So there's a wider variety of indicator fish species and invertebrate fish species. We count nine species of fish, mm-hmm. right? And we will typically find maybe four of those on every survey in Peninsula Malaysia, but we'll typically find six or seven of them in Sabah. The numbers might be lower, but there's more variety. So This is the problem with the data. One of the problems with the data is that the average masks that variety. And so the headline data of 50% is like, it's nice PR,
yeah.
but we need to do a lot more with it than that and dig down into it and say we need to look at it on a site-by-site basis. So what's happening in Tierman? What's happening in Mantanani? What's happening in Kapalai?
Mm.
And go more specific to the locations to make real management decisions.
And, I mean, are you on that path already? Are you kind of heading in that direction already?
I think we are. I think we are because this move that we've seen in the last few years to becoming more involved in management has to be done locally,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got to be there on the ground, looking at what the impacts are, looking at what's causing them, and then working with the local stakeholders to say, okay, we really need you to stop doing that because it's damaging the reefs. But you can't say that because that's then just some white guy from outside coming and telling them stop doing that, and that doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's why we have the teams on the island. That's why the 5 years on, you know, in Tierman and Mantanani, we're trying to – it's almost reaching out to the hearts and minds one by one. It's a bit of a cliche, but that's what it is. You know, we've got two local staff now on Tierman, and it's not us now telling the islanders. It's their community members. They are now going out and – talking to people about the impacts. And that goes down a lot better than some white guy who's based in an office in KL, trust me.
And I guess, you know, from everything that you said, the key culprits are tourism development, overfishing, destructive fishing, and pollution and waste. Am I right?
Yes.
And how are we doing? I mean, what tourism related, I think that's something that we need to talk about because everyone assumes that, you know, tourism is good, I mean, for the economy, right? But are we in danger of overdeveloping our tourism infrastructure to the detriment of the reefs?
Yes, we are. Of course we are. Everybody wants more development, right? Everybody mm-hmm. wants more tourism jobs. And I get that. We're not a bunch of woolly-headed tree huggers that go around saying, you can't do that, you can't do that. We'd rather be more pragmatic and say, okay, development, fine. but can we make sure we do it in such a way that we don't destroy the very things that people want to come and see? Yeah. So let's take the two locations we're working in at the moment, two key locations, Mantanani and Tierman. In Mantanani, there's a traditional fishing community of about 1,000 people. And until the recent generation, their livelihood has been based around fishing. But several things are coming together at once. One is that there's too much fish bombing, which is damaging the reefs, okay? So that's reducing fish populations. And they're having to go further and further to get decent fish catches. The second thing is the younger generation doesn't really want to work in the fishing industry. It's not, you know, that there's a generational change here. Mm-hmm. And the third thing is tourism has grown massively in the island in the last 4 or 5 years. There's now several hundred people a day sometimes going to the island on day trips to go snorkeling, diving, whatever. But the locals are not involved in that industry, right?
Agreed.
So you've got a mismatch here. You've got big tourism on the islands, and the locals are looking at this and saying, what are all these people doing on our island? And why don't we get any money out of it?
Yeah.
And we can't go fishing anymore because of these things that have happened in the past. So we're trying to get the locals involved into tourism. But how far do you take the tourism, right, before it becomes destructive in itself?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some issues we're grappling with at the moment, making sure that the locals benefit from tourism so that they stop the destructive fishing. Right, we've got to do that. But what capacity building is required? What training is required? How much investment is required? What's that got to do with coral reef conservation? I mean, what does this organization do? We're an economic development arm, really.
Yeah.
And then we look at Tierman, which has been a tourism market for 30 years.
Probably.
And there's a proposal to build a new airport. Okay, I get it. You know, I like to go to Tierman and I don't really like the 5-hour cross journey across the peninsula and then waiting around for a boat and a boat for 2 hours. An hour's flight in would be much more convenient. But airports are damaging, right? And if you start to landfill areas to create land to build an airport, you're doing a lot of physical damage to the bottom there. Is there any coral reef there? You're releasing a lot of siltation over a period of time. Where does that go and how does it affect the reefs? So we're not against the airport, but we'd like to see that the airport is built in a way, like I said, that doesn't damage the reefs that people are coming to see.
But logically also, you know, with an airport, it would just, I would assume, would mean more people coming. And when we all know the effects of more people or uncontrolled tourist arrivals in a place like that.
Yep. So that's the next thing. It's like, okay, we fixed the airport. What do we do about the accommodation?
Yeah.
So Tierman again, they want to, you know, there's pressure to build more resorts. How do you move people around? Well, the island has a very, very limited road infrastructure. So let's build a road down the island. What a great idea. But then we have to cut through virgin jungle to do that, and that's going to create more siltation problems and so on and so on. Okay, so we'll build more jetties and move people around by boat. Yeah, but building the jetty also damages the coral reef just off the beach. And by the way, when you build the resorts, you get siltation and pollution running into the sea, which kills the reef just off the beach, and so the problems repeat themselves. So I'm not pretending this is an easy problem to deal with, but I think we should be honest with ourselves and acknowledge these issues so that we can then deal with them. If we ignore them, then we are definitely, I'm sticking my neck out a little bit here, but if we ignore these issues and develop the islands without thinking about it, we will affect the reefs adversely and we will see them decline over a period of time. Okay, so there's a prediction for you. But if we develop the island carefully and we manage the construction so that, for example, silt curtains are put in place so that when the land is cleared, the silt doesn't all end up smothering the coral reefs.
Yep.
That's a relatively easy thing to do. And in fact, when they built the marina in Tierman about 10, 12 years ago, a lot of silt curtains were put in place to control that silt. Good stuff. Let's just make sure that happens. When we're developing resorts, do we want to go mass tourism for Tierman? I don't think so. Tierman's a little jewel. It's beautiful. It's got endemic species. It's got undisturbed rainforest. It's like this is a potential gold mine as an ecotourism destination. So let's think of that. Let's think of small-scale resorts integrated into the landscape. Let's think about having small numbers of people paying lots of money, and there's plenty of people out there like that, for a special visit to a special place. Then we get the tourism value without getting the negative impact of mass tourism.
For sure.
So how do we want to do this, right? What's our tourism strategy going on in a way which integrates development and the need for economic growth, which we get, we understand that, but how do we integrate that with conserving the ecosystems, not just marine but terrestrial as well, on the island? That's the draw. You cut down those trees and kill those reefs, there will be no tourists, right?
Yep.
So we've got to recognize that.
So are you kind of in talks with anybody? Are you trying to get this message out in any other way? I mean, because you are engaging on a policy level now, if I'm not mistaken.
We're getting there. We're talking to Marine Parks Department about our role in the community management and how that's going to develop. We're also looking at a couple of locations where there is a kind of a conflict between the needs of the state and the needs of the federal bodies to manage these areas. So we're trying to sort of start a discussion about how do we better integrate management with conservation? Because at the moment, under the Malaysian constitution, you've got this split. You've got the state land is owned by the state. Okay. So the state, any of the states, I'm not going to pick one, but any of the states can say, okay, we're going to develop that island. All right. And we don't care about the consequences on the marine environment because we don't look after that bit. Yeah. That's the federal Department of Marine Parks Malaysia, JTLM, Jabatan Taman Laut Malaysia. That's their problem. We want to build on the land and get more tourists. Now, that construction on the land will have an impact on the reefs, there's no question. But Jabatan Taman Laut Malaysia cannot turn around to state and say, you can't develop this because you'll kill the reefs and we're looking after the reefs. So there's that mismatch. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of communication and institutional capabilities. Not capabilities, but it's a conflict. Yep. Right? There is a conflict there. So what we're trying to say is, why not try to integrate the two together? Just talk to each other, right? Get a better dialogue going. So you need a multi-stakeholder consultation now that includes the local people.
For sure.
They've been left out. The tourism operators, they've also been left out. The state-level authorities and the federal authorities to say, what is the best solution for all of these people long-term in terms of development, economic growth, and conservation? So that's what we're advocating for now. The current law which manages marine parks is inadequate, and a lot of people recognize this. There have been various attempts to draft new laws, but those are ongoing. Mm-hmm. But it's my hope that we can get a better dialogue between state level and federal level to integrate those two things together, the development and the conservation.
Okay. It's funny you mentioned this because I don't know if you read about what's happening in Venice. The people, the locals are, well, up in arms because they hate all the tourists that are coming in. And like you said, you know, they're being shipped in like cruise ships, for example. So they don't actually spend a lot of money in the country. I mean, in Venice itself, they're just in and out and just destroying the whole beauty of the place. So I guess it's kind of related in that way.
So my wife will kill me when she hears this, but she's just come back from a cruise around the Aegean. And one of the places she stopped with was Venice, and places like Dubrovnik as well, they're overloaded with tourists. I agree. Yeah. And it's up to the authorities now to recognize that and act on it.
Yeah.
I saw the article and they're talking about the local population in Venice going down from like 150,000 10 years ago to 50,000 today because it's just unlivable.
Yeah.
Okay. The same thing is happening here. There was an article in the media yesterday about Sabah Parks wanting to increase the fees so that they can manage and control the number of tourists going to the islands. So that's one mechanism. Yeah, there are others. You can do studies of carrying capacity or limits of acceptable change and say, how many people can we have here before they have so much impact on the environment that it starts to cause damage to the environment? These are difficult studies. They're expensive and then time consuming, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't do them.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get to grips with the level of tourism we want. Do we want mass tourism? Do we want Venice? Or do we want a smaller number of people who are going to pay more money? There's a market out there for them. There are tourism people in Malaysia. Prof Amran at UITM, for example, he's done ecotourism studies. So there are people here who understand these issues. Let's get them involved in the debate and talk about sensibly about development, economics, conservation, social needs. You know, another 100,000 visitors to Tiermans. Somebody said recently with the new gateway development, we should double the number of tourists to Tiermans. Where are you going to put them?
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to get them there? There aren't enough boats for that. There aren't enough rooms for that. We're already overloaded in some places. So I think let's look at the value we place on tourism and then see where the value in tourism is in terms of a balance between numbers and revenues.
So just going back to the report, I mean, okay, so we've covered tourism, but what about things like, for example, overfishing and pollution and waste and management and those sorts of things? What are your recommendations for those sorts of, problems?
Yeah, those are things that we call local impact. So we were talking about bleaching earlier on. That's a global impact. There's mm-hmm. nothing that I can do as a local manager to cut CO2. Okay. I mean, well, I'm not, well, I can put cut my own personal CO2, but that's an international agreements level. Okay. But what we can do is look at the local impacts. So tourist damage, boats damage. What do you do with the oil from your engine when you change the engine oil? What do we do about waste management on the islands? So Tiermann has a reasonably good waste management system. They have a compactor. They have an incinerator. Questionable about that, but at least they have a system to manage their waste. Mantanani, nothing. So people just literally throw stuff in the ocean. That's terrible. They can't do that, I hear you say.
Yes.
What else would you like them to do with it?
Yeah.
There is literally zero waste management. There is nobody to collect it. There's nowhere to store it. It's not transported off. Now, that is changing. There's been some investment in that recently, but that's been the historic position. So who's to blame for that? The locals? Well, they don't really have a choice. You want us to keep it on the back of the island and let it turn into a landfill? You'd probably tell us off if we did that, right? Okay, the tourists, well, carry all of your waste off with you. That's not going to happen. Local government, they don't have the resources, they say. National government for attracting too many tourists. So these problems are always more nuanced than you think they are.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to advocate for is more local management. So stop trying to do it from Putrajaya, put more of the management on the island, have the local people there involved in the management, get the local state people involved, like I said, get the local DOE involved, the local housing people involved, so that there's a conversation going on about, yeah, we need more jobs, okay, so we need more tourists, right, so we need more hotels, but what's that going to have, what impact is that going to have on the marine environment and the terrestrial environment, and how do we balance those? But I think if we had more local management, and our program on Tiermann perhaps demonstrates this, you can talk to people on the ground and have a more meaningful conversation. So on Tiermann, we're having increasing numbers of dive centers who are part of what's called the Greenfins program.
Yep.
And that's a program to get them to reduce their environmental impact. I can't do that from an office in KL. But I can do it. I've got people on the ground who are talking to them literally every day, right? Also on Tiermann, we're trying to get more hotels to get certified as green hotels, right? Another little program. Can't do that from KL, but I've got somebody on the island now who's going around and knocking on doors and saying, hey, what about this? What about this? So local impacts, managing all of those, reducing the trash, reducing the sewage pollution. We've even made some progress on that on Tiermann with IWK coming to desludge some of the septic tanks
on
one part of the island. Big step forward. Now let's make it a bigger program. Now let's cover the rest of the island and all of the other islands. But it's a small win, and I think you get that if you've got local involvement on the ground. Yes, you need somebody in KL talking to government, you know, but I think we need to devolve more of the responsibility to local level so we can manage those local impacts and get the locals involved in the conversation.
And just to conclude, I suppose, what are some tangible actions that somebody like me, anyone here just listening, you know, can do to protect our coral reefs?
This is always a difficult one because, like I said right at the beginning, the reefs are an invisible ecosystem, right? So you never see them. Look out the window, there are trees.
Yeah.
Well, there used to be more trees, but there are forests. People understand terrestrial ecosystems. But so often, you're driving along in the traffic, you're stuck in a traffic jam, and somebody opens the window of their car and drops out an empty cigarette packet or a plastic bag or something. Please stop doing that. Because
agreed.
That stuff ends up in the drain and the drain goes into the river, and I drive across the Klang River every day on my way home from the station, and if it's been raining, there is a carpet of trash coming down the river, and the river goes into the sea and empties onto my coral reefs. So everything we do here has an impact downstream on the reefs. So reduce water consumption, reduce power consumption, because then you help to contribute to reducing CO2. And that's the global problem we're dealing with. But on a local level, just be a bit more responsible. Have some respect. You know, if you do go diving, go to a Greenfins operator. If you go, you know, go to a green resort, find an operator who's making a difference. And there are operators out there. Right, people we work with, people like B&J on Tiermann, people like Scuba Junkie on Mabel, they're making a real difference. So go stay with them because you're helping them with their conservation efforts, and all those little things make a difference. Don't make the mistake of thinking it's such a big problem that I can't do anything about it. Each and every one of us can do little things that together make a big cumulative impact.
Okay, and 10 years? 10 years more?
10 years more.
I mean, how are you guys?
I hope I'll be retired before then.
How are you guys celebrating your 10 years of very good and very hard work?
We are having a little gathering in August to bring together some of our supporters, so some sponsors, some of our eco-divers, some of our volunteers, some of the industry players that we work with to say thank you. To celebrate the fact and maybe generate a little bit of PR and some interest. So we're trying to bring some people along who haven't yet supported us, but hopefully will, some more corporations. And yeah, so a bit of a party, but with a very serious intent, which is to say 10 years of data, it's looking okay, but if we pick into this a bit more, there are some problems that we need to deal with. So let's start working on some of those things over the next 10 years. I don't know if I'll be around for another 10 years, but we'll see.
All the best to you. And thank you so much for doing the work that you do.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Julian Hyde. He's the general manager of Reef Check Malaysia. And we've been discussing the status of coral reefs in Malaysia. For more information, you can visit reefcheck.org.my. And I think you also have an open call for volunteer divers sometimes.
Yes, we train 50, 60, 70 people a year on how to conduct surveys. And then they join us and help us do the surveys. Very important.
Okay. So, you know who to get in touch with.
Yes.
This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.